Hi, and welcome to Favorites with Mix Baker. I find that whenever we're trying to get to know someone, we always ask them about your favorites. What are your favorite things to do? What are your favorite colors, foods, etc.? And so in order to do this podcast, I figured I would share my top three favorite poems that I've used thus far in lessons in education. There is one bonus, and that is an actual piece of prose, but it's written by Jerry Spinelli, so it's definitely got a lot of poetic and figurative language within it. But what I'd like to do is either read the poems themselves or, in some cases, have an expert read them for me and then talk about their impact on my teaching and also my students in my classroom. The first poem that I really wanted to talk about was one that I used with sixth graders, one of my first years being an ESOL teacher. It's called Speech Class for Joe by Jim Daniels. Jim Daniels is a very accomplished poet and deservedly so. This poem is, in terms of word choice, very, I guess, basic. But the content, the way it makes you feel, you'll be forever changed. It's written on like a second to third grade reading level. But in order to really have people understand what it's about and how it feels, teaching it with, you know, going into middle school or middle schoolers is the best way to go. That empathy piece is so necessary. I'm already breaking my rules because I told you that I was going to read the poems first and then talk about them. So, without further ado, Speech Class for Joe by Jim Daniels. We were outcasts. You with your stutters and me with my slurring. And that was plenty for a friendship. When we left class to go to the therapist, we hoped they wouldn't laugh. Took turns reminding the teacher, me and Joe have to go to speech class now. Or me and Jim have to go to speech now. Miss Clark, therapist, was also God, friend, mother. Once she took us to the zoo on a field trip. Are you gonna look at the monkeys? Maybe they'll teach you how to talk. We clenched teeth and went and felt the sun and fed the animals. And we were a family of broken words. For years, we tried so hard. And I finally learned where to place my tongue and how to make the sounds. And graduated. But the first time you left class without me, I felt that punch in the gut. I felt like a deserter and wanted you to have my voice. Is that not the most moving thing you have ever heard? I mean, it tears me up. And I shared it with my students because that punch in the gut part, by the time you get to it, you feel it. You feel it. Very simple language. Not a lot to be guessed. Not a lot of similes, metaphors. But the literal nature of what he was talking about. Oh my goodness. Ah. So I used this poem to help students with fluency, reading with fluency, and also practicing public speaking. One student read this poem, and I knew that it changed him. And by the time he graduated, he went across the stage and hugged every single person who was giving him his certificate. And in a way, I knew that he had changed. He was ready for a new chapter of his life. He had exited ESOL that year. And he seemed to be living out this poem, but not having the same regret. I think, you know, hearing that somebody else felt the same, and this man was a professional and also so successful, kind of changed him, and for the better. It was a beautiful thing to see. And it was one of the defining moments in my education career. The next poem I want to read is Black Hair by Gary Soto. This poem, well, I told you, I'm going to read it and then I'll talk about it. Black Hair by Gary Soto. At 8, I was brilliant with my body. In July, that ring of heat, we all jumped through. I sat in the bleachers of Romaine Playground in the lengthening shade that rose from our dirty feet. The game before us was more than baseball. It was a figure, Hector Moreno. Quick and hard with turn muscles, his crouch the one I assumed before an altar of worn baseball cards in my room. I came here because I was Mexican, a stick of brown light in love of those who could do it. The triple and hard slide, the gloves eating balls into double plays. What could I do with 50 pounds, my shyness, my black torch of hair, about to go out? Father was dead, his face no longer hanging over the table or our sleep, and mother was the terror of mouths, twisting hurt by butter knives. In the bleachers, I was brilliant with my body, waving players in and stomping my feet, growing sweaty in the presence of white shirts. I chewed sunflower seeds. I drank water and bit my arm through the late innings. When Hector lined balls into deep center, in my mind, I rounded the bases with him. My face flared, my hair lifting beautifully, because we were coming home to the arms of brown people. Wow. This poem I use often with Roberto Clemente's biography. Pride of the Pittsburgh Pirates. It is really important when talking about how representation changes the way you see yourself. So clearly, and see yourself in the world as a member of the world community and your own community. It's clear that Gary Soto was having a just a rough bout in his life. You know, his father had just passed. He hadn't seen anybody in the public eye who looked like him doing the things that he wanted to do until Hector Moreno. And he wanted so badly to live through his actions. He's just questioning himself. What can I really do with 50 pounds, shyness, a black torch of hair about to go out? But this man is someone I can aspire to be. And he looks like me. And did I mention he looks like me? Wow. That part is so powerful. He's talking about a shared experience that a lot of the kids can relate to. I chewed sunflower seeds. I drank water and bit my arm through the late innings. You know, it's something that if you haven't already shared an experience like that with a parent or a friend, the poem makes you want to do it. And in terms of learning about leaders who either broke color barriers like Roberto Clemente, or just really were beacons of hope for a lot of people who were starving for that kind of representation in sports and media. This poem is really important when trying to let children know you're seen. You've been here. And wherever you're going, we're watching. You're important. You are your own Hector Moreno. And that's really something that you want to impart early and remind them about often. The next poem, I can't read it the right way. There is a woman on YouTube who reads it so much better than I could ever read it. Her name is Thelma Ruffin Thomas, and she is reading Harriet Tubman, which is a poem written by Eloise Greenfield. And you'll see, or actually hear, why Thelma just does it better. Listen.
Have you ever heard of Harriet Tubman? Well, Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff. Wasn't scared of nobody neither. Didn't come in this world to be no slave. And wasn't going to stay one either. Farewell, she said to her friends one night. She was mighty sad to leave them. She ran away one hot dark night, ran looking for her freedom. Cause Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff, wasn't scared of nobody neither. Didn't come in this world to be no slave and wasn't going to stay one either. She ran to the woods, she ran through the woods with those slave catchers right behind her. She kept on running till she got to the north where those mean men couldn't find her. Cause Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff, wasn't scared of nobody neither. Didn't come in this world to be no slave, and wasn't going to stay one either. And wasn't going to stay one either. 19 times she went back south to save 300 others. She ran for her freedom 19 times to save black sisters and brothers. Cause Harriet Tubman didn't take no stuff, wasn't scared of nobody neither. Didn't come in this world to be no slave and wasn't going to stay one either.
And she sure didn't. She sure didn't. That poem is in Honey, I Love, which is in Writing Fundamentals, the poetry unit. Again, grade 2-3 words. And the rhythm, of course, is something that the children love. But the message is a lot more important. I think this poem is great, not just to show kids that she was a real rebel and she didn't take no stuff. But also to kind of introduce children, if they didn't know already, to call and response and spoken word poetry, and the idea that this kind of melodic, rhythmic poetry is something that has existed for years on this soil. And it is a defining part of our country's history. And so was she. I like this one because the motivation in it too is something that the children can sing. It can take it home. They can sing it with others. It's just fun. And even though it's talking about a topic that is anything but, it should deserve a lot more reverence, I think the fact that it's an earworm and it stays with you when you are old enough to really get it, so to speak, you realize, wow, she really didn't. She was that woman. Okay. The last thing I'm going to read is actually not a poem. It is a piece of prose by Jerry Spinelli. I'm sure you could have guessed. Anybody who writes prose like a poet is undoubtedly Jerry Spinelli. This is from Maniac McGee, which is often read in fifth grade. And if you don't know the story, it's about a little boy who is white, who is without parents and ends up on the side of town that is made for Black people. So this is about a Jim Crow era community. And there is a literal line in the community, which is really poignant nowadays because, of course, we're talking about segregation still in terms of redlining, but also self-segregation and forced removal of people in terms of gentrification. And so when children read Maniac McGee in fifth grade, it's kind of like an introduction to a world that not only once existed in the United States, but is still very much alive. They might not have been aware of it before, but they're aware of it in this text. And they're also aware that human emotion, human empathy, and the ability to seek change and understanding transcends all of the stuff that segregation and separation brings to a community. So I will read this portion of the text where the main character and his thought nemesis are coming to an unspoken understanding. Morning after morning, it happened this way. The two of them dovetailing at an intersection and without the slightest hitch and stride, cruising off together. Though each face showed no awareness of the other, They were, in fact, minutely sensitive to each other. If Mars Bar cranked up the pace just a notch, Maniac would pick it up within a stride. If Maniac inched ahead, Mars Bar was there. If one veered to the left or the right, the other followed like a shadow. One day, one was the leader. The next day, the other. One day, Mars Bar would lead Maniac down the river, down the tracks, past the railroad gondolas, each with its mountain of coal, to the rolling mill at the steel plant where his father worked. Another day, Maniac would head over the townships to the north and west, the farmlands of the county, where dew sparkled on spider webs, and nature was doing such fresh and wonderful things that you could almost hear the long, neat congregations of corn clapping, "Amen!" and "Amen!" When the working people began leaving their houses, the Daybreak Boys diverged, Mars Bar to the east end, Maniac to wherever. A week passed, a second week, morning after morning, stride for stride, breath for breath. Never a word, never a glance, each believing the other simply happened to be going where he was going. I like this text because fifth grade is usually when children start, if they haven't already, finding out who they are as individuals. Maybe they stop being friends with someone that they were friends with most of their, schooling years. Maybe they're meeting people that they realize, wow, I really don't like the way you treat me, or I don't like the way you're acting right now. And in seeing the way that these two children interact with each other, how they really don't like each other at first, and how by the end of the story, they come to know that their experiences, though they can't really relate to each other, make them very well suited to be friends. This book to me brings up a dichotomy that I don't think children really considered, and that is one child has nowhere to go, but can go anywhere, and that's Maniac. The other child has somewhere to go. He has a good family. He has a nice sister. But he just can't go everywhere that is meant for him in his town. The people who run it have placed him in one area. And if he goes outside those limits, he could be in danger. And so it really forces everyone in the room to think, wow, knowing that this is still going on, not only what is my current situation, what am I going through, how can I relate to these characters, but how can the people around me relate to them as well? And why hasn't something like this changed all that much in this amount of time? It really makes you ponder. And when trying to create leaders in an education space, an academic space, I think in a weird way, it's a good motivator. It's a great book to read to have students think about how they are going to be that change that they want to see in their world. So that has been Favorites with Mix Baker. I'm Mix Baker. These were my favorite poems or poetic readings from my education career. I hope you enjoyed them. And let me know if you have any poems of your own that you'd like to share. Thanks so much for listening.